When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hello everyone, how are you doing? This is Luke from Luke's English Podcast, and my series of World Cup episodes continues in this one. Now, look, I know that some of you might be fed up with the World Cup at this stage, and I completely understand. Some of you just might not be into football. And you might be thinking, oh, what, really, Luke? You too? Have you been bitten by World Cup zombies as well? Because everyone else seems to be completely obsessed with the World Cup at the moment. But not Luke from Luke's English Podcast as well. Well, look, if you can't stand football, then I do apologise. And let me reassure you, okay, let me reassure you that this is just a phase, okay? It's just a phase that I'm going through. And once the World Cup's finished, it'll be back to normal podcasting as usual. In fact, I might upload some other stuff before the end of the World Cup. But at the moment, it's just I'm a little obsessed by the World Cup. And I think a lot of people in the world are too. In fact, I know that plenty of my listeners are really enjoying these World Cup episodes. And it's just, you know, it's like an international thing. But don't worry, normal podcasting will be resumed in due course. All right. But for now, I'm sticking to the World Cup. Now, this episode was supposed to be my brief history of the World Cup, okay? And I kind of collected information from Wikipedia, from my own memory and my own knowledge, and also my dad, Rick Thompson, otherwise known as Wikipedia sometimes. Why is he called Wikipedia? Because he sort of, he knows everything, he knows something about everything, but the things he knows may not be completely reliable. So that's why we call him Wikipedia. So I did produce a history of the World Cup based on some stuff I found online, some things I knew already, and some contributions from my dad. And you know what? I started recording it, and as I was reading it, I was thinking, this is not interesting. This isn't interesting enough. It's not engaging enough. It's just me reading a script. It's not fun. It's not good enough. And so in the end, I've decided, no, I'm not going to do my complete history of the World Cup. I'm not going to deny you that information because you'll find all of it on this website. You'll find it on the webpage for this episode. But what I'm going to do instead is just let you listen to a conversation that I had with my dad about the 1966 World Cup. And that's when England won it. It was hosted in London. It's the only time that England have won the World Cup and may be the only time we ever win in the future based on the way we've been performing recently. Now, I know that England are out of the World Cup now. I think the last time I spoke to you on the podcast was before our game against Uruguay. Well, we lost that game so we're out of the World Cup. But I'm not going to go on about it much more because well, I mean, I'm not going to complain about it a lot because a lot of countries didn't even qualify for the finals at all. So, you know, I shouldn't really complain. But yeah, I'm gutted that England are out. But I'm still following the World Cup. I'm still fascinated. It's still great to see all these footballing nations competing with each other. But I'm not going to give you my entire World Cup history. It's just too long and it's just too many details. You don't want to know. You don't really want to know how many goals Italy scored in 1934, do you? If you do want to know that, then you can go to, you can find episode 190 and just scroll down and you'll find the script that I was going to read to you. And you can just read it. You can just read it in your own head. But I'm sorry, I'm not uploading it because it just wasn't interesting enough. All right, my quality control my principles and my quality control department in my head just said, no, sorry, we can't pass this. We're not allowing this to be published. It's too dull. All right, so there you go. All right, so what I'm going to do is just play you a conversation with my dad about the 1966 World Cup and some other stuff. All right, so that's what you're going to listen to now. Here we go. Rick Thompson in conversation. It's going to start right now. Now. So, okay, so I'm now joined by my dad, Rick Thompson, on the podcast, not for the first time. You've been on it before, haven't you, Dad?
Hello, Luke. Yes, I have.
Do you remember the occasions when you've appeared in the past?
Well, I haven't appeared recently. I can't really remember, no.
You were on the second ever episode, which was all about Easter. Do you remember that? We talked about eggs.
Easter traditions, yes.
And you also appeared on your own episode, all devoted to you, called Wikipedia.
Oh, that's right. People sent in questions about anything, and I had to try and answer them.
Yeah.
And as you said, Wikipedia was quite a good name because it's unreliable.
Yeah, you seem to have an answer for everything, but it's not necessarily completely reliable. And also you've appeared on other episodes too. There was one in which I recorded us all having conversations and debates about things around the table at Christmas time. You might not remember that.
Yes, I do vaguely remember that one, but now it's high summer.
It is.
I hope our conversations help your listeners listen to English as it is spoken and also find it reasonably entertaining.
Let's just hope so, shall we? Let's hope they're being entertained by this. You never know, they might all be completely fed up with the World Cup at this point.
Well, I'm sure that it's a bit divisive. You'd think the entire world is obsessed with the World Cup, but of course there's plenty of people who aren't interested in football and they've got nothing else to watch on the TV, so they're probably a bit unhappy about it. But, of course, it comes around every 4 years, and if you have got any interest in football at all, it's fantastic, first of all. So, yeah, I love it.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I'm not normally that bothered by football, but when the World Cup comes around, I just get sort of seized by World Cup fever, and that's what's going on at the moment. So I'm in the middle in this episode. I'm in the middle of my own sort of brief history of the World Cup, and we've got to the point where I'm dealing with the 1966 World Cup, which, as we all know, took place in England, in London, in 1966. And so I know that you were there at the time, so I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, I certainly can. It'll feel like ancient history to a lot of your listeners, 1966. I was just waiting to go to college at that time, and my brother and I had got two tickets to go to Wembley for the first match, the opening match, where the Queen was there, and I declare this World Cup open. And we played Uruguay, who we are playing this evening.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so the opening match is against Uruguay, and it was a deadly dull 0-0 draw.
Okay.
I mean, the opening match is quite normally people say, oh, quite likely to be a draw because teams don't want to lose their first game in the group stages. But this year has proved different. There's been loads of goals in the first round games. Anyway, that was the first match, and then we had tickets for a semi-final, and you had to get tickets not knowing who the semi-finalists were going to be, but we just decided we'd go to a semi-final. And much to our astonishment, England had got through and were playing Portugal in this semi-final. Portugal were one of the hot favourites.
Yes, they were one of the top teams in the world at that point.
Yes, they had one of the best players in the world, a bloke called Eusebio, who was stunning, very, very skillful, very fast.
Yeah.
And well, nobody had really expected England to do that well because basically it was a kind of a workhorse team. There were one or two flair players. Bobby Charlton was the big flair player, and the goalkeeper was probably the best in the world, Gordon Banks.
Yeah.
But a lot of the players were quite slow. Jeff Hurst, who played up front and ended up scoring a hat trick, was really quite a slow player, and alongside him was a guy called Roger Hunt, who was even slower.
Right.
And you know, it didn't look like a dazzlingly brilliant team.
Can I just ask you about the two expressions you used there? One thing you said was that they were a workhorse team, and the other one was that they You mentioned flair players. What do you mean by flair players, actually?
Well, flair is probably taken from the French, but it means playing with some kind of style, with some kind of verve, with creativity. Mm. Flair and creativity go together. Yes, exciting
skills and things. We see flair. I mean, every player is expected to have some level of flair these days, aren't they? Back in those days, it wasn't necessarily something that every player had. But the Brazilians are well known for having flair, of course, the South Americans in general. So it's, you know, you look at players like Messi and the way he controls the ball. It's exciting to watch. So you can definitely say he has flair.
Yes, indeed you can. Incredible skill, but also the ability to do something unexpected.
Mm, yeah. The other one was that England were a workhorse team.
Well, yes, it's an expression that basically, obviously, it relates to different kinds of horses. There are racehorses, which are thoroughbreds, and there are workhorses, which plod along and, you know, maybe pull the plough through the fields. I mean, when I say a workhorse team, they were regarded as being solid, genuine, but not particularly brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, at the time that you went to the semi-final, was it at Wembley?
Yes, it was.
Okay. How old were you? You must have been 19 or something?
18, I think. 18 or 19, yes.
18 years old. Wow, it must have been amazing. And you were living in London in 1966?
That's right, living in South London.
How was it, by the way, at the time in London at that during that year?
Well, there was obviously a lot of excitement about England's progression in the World Cup. As I say, rather unexpected. And the scene in London generally, if that's what you mean, it was very different. There wasn't nearly as much traffic. Obviously it's become incredibly busy and crowded, multicultural city.
Yeah.
In those days it was rather calmer and it wasn't so jammed up.
Yeah.
And I worked a little bit in London commuting in on a train. The idea of not getting a seat on the train, you know, never occurred to you. So it's just less crowded.
Right. I, for some reason, have this idea in my head that London in 1966 was all sort of swinging London and Mary Quant miniskirts and kind of Austin Powers, you know, running around going, groovy, baby, you know, like kind of the Beatles jumping out of taxis and that kind of thing. But I suppose that was only a small part of the scene, isn't it, really?
Part of London was absolutely like that, Luke.
Yes.
I worked for about 6 months before I went to college in an advertising agency right in the middle of the creative part of London, yes, not far away from Wardour Street in a place called Upper St Martin's Lane.
Soho.
And I mean, it was like that. People were dressed extravagantly. There was lots going on. People were groovy, baby. And working in this advertising agency at my age, they just let me do all sorts of things because I was young. So this was a good thing. And yeah, so if I had an idea, it must be a good one, you know. So it was, anything was possible, and it was very, very exciting. And lots of music everywhere as well.
I suppose the World Cup sort of managed to capture some of that spirit as well. I mean, it just became part of what was probably a very exciting time. So tell me about the semi-final. What happened?
The semi-final, yes. So there we go. We're going to see England versus the brilliant Portugal. We were standing behind one of the goals. In those days, you would stand, yeah, okay, in large parts of the ground. Of course, there was some seating, but there were still big standing areas behind the goals.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Wembley Stadium had about 100,000 people in it, which is quite a lot by its present capacity. Of course, Bobby Charlton scored a goal down the far end.
Yeah.
And then they equalised. And then we scored another.
Yeah.
Charlton again, yeah, and we're thinking, can't believe this, you know, we're beating Portugal. And it was, you know, the clock was ticking. We thought, you know, we're going to hang on here and get through to the final. Couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And then they were attacking the goal at our end. Portugal were attacking and attacking, trying to score the equaliser.
Yeah.
And with about 2 minutes to go, their captain, a bloke who played right back, I can't quite remember his name, Kaluna, I think his name is Kaluna.
Right.
ball came out to him just on the edge of the penalty area, and he hit it incredibly hard. It was going right into the top corner, straight at us. You know, we could see it coming straight for us and coming into the top corner. And I've never heard, 50,000 people all suck in their breath together.
Yeah.
You know, the whole stadium went like that.
Yeah.
And then Gordon Banks's fingers appeared and tipped it over the bar.
Oh, wow. Amazing save.
Was an amazing save.
Wow, it sounds incredible.
And so England went on to the final. I didn't see the final. Believe it or not, I had to see the highlights later because I was travelling down to the West Country in my car. So I didn't actually see it live, which is a pity. But obviously, people who study these things will know that we played Germany. Germany were also very, very strong.
Yeah.
And it was a fascinating game. And, it went into extra time when they equalised with just seconds to go. Mm-hmm. And then Jeff Hurst hit the bar and the ball came down and the linesman and the referee gave the goal. But subsequent replays show they didn't quite cross the line.
Yeah.
And then we went on to score another, so we won 4-2. So, I mean, it was great, great joy and rapture, but England have never won the World Cup again, mm-hmm. and I'm afraid it'll be a long time before they do.
Do you think they can do it this time?
No, I don't.
Really, you think it's impossible?
I mean, as we are talking, we're just about 3 hours off England playing their second game against Uruguay.
Uh-huh.
And if they lose it, they're out. If they win it, that changes the thing altogether.
Yeah.
But I don't have a very good feeling about this. The other players in this World Cup, some of them are absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And I hope I'm going to be proved wrong, but I can't really say that I think England are as good as Holland or Germany or Brazil.
Or even Chile. I mean, they were...
Well, Chile looking good, aren't they?
Chile, again, I mean... At this point in the tournament, while this is being recorded, yesterday Chile beat Spain 2-0. I mean, Spain, it's a pity, but maybe their time as being the world champions is kind of over, because that group of players who were so fantastic together, they're a little bit older now and they maybe don't have the energy or the spirit to keep on, you know, pushing. And they got thoroughly smashed to pieces by...
Yes, I mean...
5-1, not 4... I think I said 4-1 on my last podcast, but it's actually 5-1.
They lost 5-1 to Holland,
yeah.
And then they lost 2-0 to Chile.
Yes, and Chile just looked just tough.
They looked tough and determined. I mean, there's something about the World Cup that is about character as well as anything else.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't want to... stereotype the Spanish in any way at all. I'm talking about their players, and I think some of their players don't react well if they go a goal behind.
Yeah, you think they're a bit sort of...
Spain are great when they're winning, but when they're not, they don't seem to know what to do.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. It is very interesting, the whole thing about it being in the mind. It's all in the mind, isn't it? It's about character and about getting into the right frame of mind.
Well, I think that's right. And we go back all the way back to 1966, and I said the expectations weren't very high of the England team. They did have fantastic determination and character.
Mm.
And the captain, Bobby Moore, was an inspirational guy.
Yeah.
And changed the play, you know, and they had people would run forever. You know, a little guy called Alan Ball.
Yeah.
Who
little Alan Ball.
Yes, he did have a high. He was a very small guy. And he had a very high voice, but he just ran all over the pitch, all the way through extra time when everybody else was completely tired out and could hardly walk.
Yeah.
Ball was still running like mad because you know he was just so keen to win.
Yes. Okay. Well. I sincerely hope that our players can muster up the same level of determination as we did all those years ago. God, how long ago is it now?
It's 48? A long time ago.
50 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, let's just see. Well, there's only one way to find out, and just actually watch the game and just see what happens. I'm already sort of on the edge of my seat, to be honest. I'm really captured by this World Cup. So,
I think it's been really good so far, with some you know, a lot of goals and the usual kind of controversies. You're always going to get controversies, but I don't think, you know, there've been too many total blunders by the referees so far.
Yeah.
You can argue about some of these close decisions, and I'm afraid I hate the way players throw themselves down when they're just touched. It seems to me there's a difference between being touched and falling over, or being kicked down or pulled down.
Yeah.
And I hope the referees stay tough on that. And if somebody, you know, throws himself down because somebody's brushed his leg, you know, the commentators say things like, "Well, there was contact." See, contact isn't the point.
Yeah.
Did he kick him down or didn't he?
It's a contact sport. I mean, it's
indeed
not,
it is.
It's not basketball.
So I hope that the referees stay tough on the play acting, well, and that you know, it continues to be good. We've had one or two great goals. Fellaini's header was just a terrific goal. He plays for Belgium.
Oh yes. Sorry, I just said that basketball was a contact sport. Was not a contact sport.
No, it's not a contact sport.
No, it is a contact sport. Basketball. Oh, never mind. Let's not get into this debate about...
You can't touch a player if he's got the ball.
Oh, okay. So it's not a contact sport. I was correct. I was correct, listeners.
You are.
I should have trusted my instincts. But you're saying there have been some really great goals so far.
Yeah, I think there's been some good goals. And obviously, Van Persie playing for Holland looks fantastic. And I'm just saying that this guy, Fellaini, came on when Belgium desperately needed a goal against Argentina. He scored this terrific header.
Yeah. Yeah, well... I'm
really... yeah, so it's great to watch. And, I mean, your history of the World Cup, you're obviously going to look at the best moments and the worst moments. All I can say about England is that I think I was going to say I think they've been unlucky over the years.
Really?
And people would say, oh, well, you're biased, aren't you? But I think they have been a bit unlucky. You know, they were playing Argentina and playing quite well, and then Maradona scored this goal with his hand, which nearly everybody saw apart from the referee.
Yeah.
And it changed the course of the game, and, you know, couldn't recover from that.
Yeah.
Frank Lampard, 4 years ago in South Africa, scored a terrific goal against, guess who, Germany,
yeah.
Who we've had a lot of very close matches with. And it went right over the line, and the entire stadium saw that it was a goal. But again, the linesman and the referee were the only people in the place who didn't see it.
Well, maybe that's a bit of revenge, you know, it's a bit of justice there, because we did the same thing to them in 1966.
Well, there are 2 points, yes, I know. Yeah, but the differences are this. First of all, in 1966, no one was quite sure whether the ball had got over the line or not, because it was right. Very, very, very close.
Yeah.
And secondly, there are no television replays instantly available. Okay. And in this one, Lampard's, you know, goal was a long way over the line. And if they'd had goal line technology, mm-hmm. which they now have,
thank goodness.
They would have been calling for it for years, the goal would have stood. It just seems to be a great pity that these things happen. I think the 1966 decision, no one really knew it was in or not. Mm. This one, everybody knew it was. And also, we're no good at penalties. I think we've been knocked out 3 times on penalty shootouts.
No, it's in the World Cup, we've actually had 6 penalty shootout episodes since 1990. That includes the World Cup and the Euros.
Wow, that many. Six. And we've lost them all.
Yeah, it was World Cup 90 against Germany. World Cup Euro 96 against Germany, World Cup 98 against Argentina, and then we had we got knocked out by Argentina in World Cup 2002, Euros in 2004.
Well, you're very good.
The list goes on.
Okay, but I mean, people might say, all right, well, you know, you're no good at taking penalties, which is true. But the fact is that it's always a bit of a lottery. You know, the penalty, the keeper might go the right way, it might not go the right way. Mm. And I just think it's a great pity that you finish up having a penalty shootout when you want to win the game in open play.
You've got to hit the target, though. You've got to hit the target, because sometimes our players just boot the ball over the crossbar. So
yes,
not luck. But there was one case when Beckham converted a penalty over the crossbar, and the pitch was clearly
the pitch was wet, and the ball area moved, near the penalty spot was all muddy, and he slipped.
Well, you could see that when he put his foot down, the ball moved, and of course that caused him to fluff the penalty. I guess we're looking for excuses, aren't we?
Yes, I think we probably are. But to get back to your original question, I can't see England winning this World Cup, and by the time people listen to this, they may well be on their way home.
We will see. We'll see what happens. I hope that you're proven wrong, but we'll find out later on this evening.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, Dad, thanks very much for agreeing to be on Luke's English Podcast.
Okay, I look forward to hearing the whole history of the World Cup.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye for now. Okay, two things. One, my dad's not going to hear the whole history of the World Cup for all the reasons I've already given. And the other thing is, he was proven right, and we did get knocked out. Very bad news and all that stuff, but I'm getting used to it now. I'm getting used to England losing all the time, and also I'm getting over it as well. You know, I felt pretty disappointed, but you know, life goes on, doesn't it? Yes, it does. That's it for this episode, 25-minute one. If you want to read the history of the World Cup, which I did prepare, but which I'm not reading to you, then you can go to the web page for episode 190. And check it out, and you can read it there. More stuff will be uploaded soon. You've been adding, listeners to the podcast have been adding their World Cup comments to my discussion forum, and I plan to record another episode, hopefully sometime this week or the beginning of next week, in which I read out more of your comments. I think that's quite a good way of doing this, because you've all got as much to say about the World Cup as me. You know, I'm not like an expert on the World Cup. I'm sure that people listening to this have got plenty of things to say. And because it's an international celebration, it's an international tournament, it's appropriate to hear voices from around the world. So that's going to happen soon. All right, but for now, it's goodbye. Bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.